Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network. This podcast is for money out of it, and if you do, you gotta tell me, because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want.
Today,
okay?
We're going to continue and finish talking
also, of
about
course, give me an attribution. So when you get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at elgomayu.ca, my website is people.auc.ca/brodbeck.
And remember I talked about Friedman and Rosner.
Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from garageband.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.
And they found that the fat in people's diets, and again, people knew that that wasn't, you know, high amount of saturated fat wasn't good for you. They knew that in the 50s when this work was done. They also knew smoking was bad for you. It was pretty clear. Even though there were still ads on television, you know, 4 out of 5 doctors who smoke choose Camels. Worlds changed drastically. But they were equal in men and women, but men were having heart attacks basically and women weren't. On average, women were having them, but not nearly as much. So the question then became, what was going on? Well, the big difference between men and women, they figured, was the amount of stressors in their life. And you've got to realize in the 1950s that women, as a rule, didn't work outside the home. If you ever watched the TV show Mad Men, which I encourage you to because it's the most awesome show ever, it's the best show that isn't a science fiction show ever. It's the best show that isn't Battlestar Galactica ever. And you know, the women, there's one woman that has sort of any kind of responsibility as far as executive kind of job kind of thing. The rest of them are, you know, secretaries, which is work. But she's actually having a career, not just looking for a husband, that kind of thing. The world was different. You got to understand that. So the kind of stress that guys were under was quite a bit different than the stress that most women were under. And again, that's on average. So men got coronary heart disease, not women. It turned out probably to be stress in the lifestyle. The biggest thing that sort of tipped them off was the fact that accountants had a real spike in the number of heart attacks they had in late March, early April, in other words, at tax time. And of course, that's a pretty hard deadline. You start paying penalties and interest and things like that when you submit your taxes late. I've been doing my taxes. It's really fun. I do it on the internet. That's how I do everything. If I could, I'd just live on the internet. I'd live in the cloud. You know, these guys weren't using QuickTax. they were using typewriters and pencils and adding machines. And, you know, and besides, you know, when you're doing either personal taxes or corporate taxes, it's a lot of pressure there. Because if you screw it up, it's now your fault. And there's a lot of deadlines, right? So people were literally dying around tax time. Death and taxes, the only two things that are certain in life. So Friedman and Rosen said there might be something, two kinds of personalities, they said, type A and type B. Now again, they weren't psychologists, so we'll talk about personality starting Monday, and you'll see that this is a little bit different, and in fact in psychology we don't talk much about this, but nonetheless, the idea of there being a kind of personality that is really intense and one that's laid back has some traction. So type A is the intense one. Type B is the laid back one. So the type A personality, they said, the guy in the middle, that's my father. On the right's my brother. And that's, of course, you can see that's me. And note the amount of liquor there. Yes. That was Thanksgiving 2005? Yeah. And what we're making there, actually, we're making deep-fried cheesecake. Yeah, it's nothing better than you get three kind of halfway drunk guys around a fryolator. It's a really good move. By the way, if you get a chance to do this, You use a tortilla is probably the easiest thing to use, and you put like cheesecake filling in it. You wrap it up, you deep fry it, and then my brother had made like this raspberry coulis we put over top of it, and it was very good. It was very good. But that's a pretty nice picture of my father, and my dad pretty much invented the type A personality. He was an exceedingly type A man. My dad was very driven. So someone who's always goal-directed at the expense of a lot of other things. Right? Now, this leads to a lot of success in people's lives. You've got to understand that. Being really driven can usually lead to success. Well, yeah, I mean... Well, it can. Yeah, it can. But it can also lead to people that invent things. Right? You know, I would say Thomas Edison was likely a type A personality. I'm not putting my dad in the same place as Thomas Edison. I think I'd rather hang out with my dad than Thomas Edison, nonetheless, because he's my dad and all. But examples of my father being driven, when he decided that he wanted to learn how to play guitar, he taught himself when he was 13 years old. When he wanted a guitar and his parents couldn't afford one, he just learned how to build one when he was 14. He was the kind of guy that would fix anything. He could just figure stuff out. He'd look at it and go, yeah, I know how that works. He rose from being a guy with no university or college education to being an executive in a company at a bank. And then he went away from that and bought into a music store and did quite well in that too. So he was certainly driven. There's no doubt about that. He was very time-dependent, like people with type A personalities are. Meaning, deadlines are exceedingly important. I have to get this done now. Now, again, that's something we like in people, right? That tends to lead to success in life, doesn't it? Right? But the thing is, if you obsess over it, that's a whole other matter. And Dad was pretty bad that way. I remember whenever we would go grocery shopping on Saturday. I lived in London back again for a while when I was a postdoc, and we didn't have a car, so Mom and Dad would take me shopping, and Mom would go shopping. And they'd pick. I'd walk down to their place because it was pretty close by. And as soon as Dad was ready to go, it was time to go. He'd sit out in the car revving the engine until you'd come out. Just one example. That's something very small, but he was always, again, very driven by and focused on deadlines and stuff. Now, my dad did have a heart attack in 1995 when he was 52. He lived through that. He got through it fine. But to show you how driven and type A my father was, he drove himself to the hospital. He didn't call 911. He drove himself to the hospital. I watched my dad have his heart attack. He looked at my mother. We were over for dinner, and he looked at my mother and said, what do we have for dinner tonight? I can't remember. What the hell was it? She's like, you know, ham. He said, looks like I got the worst kind of heartburn I've ever had in my life. Wake up the next morning. Mom calls around 6 o'clock in the morning. Your dad's had a heart attack. I went, what? Oh, God, is he okay? Yeah, he looks like he's fine. I said, well, that must have been when he was having the chest pains last night, not heart, the, quote, heartburn. She said, yeah, that's probably what it was. He drove himself to the hospital. I said, what? She said, you know your father. So he drove himself to the hospital. I remember when my wife was having our first child, and Dad zoomed over to our, we didn't have a car, he zooms over to our house in like 90 seconds, and he says, can I drive 100 miles an hour and go through red lights? I said, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, Dad, feel free. So he did. But yeah, I mean, he literally, and I'm not making that up, he drove himself to the hospital. People with type A personalities sleep less. This may be because of the amount of stimulants they take. They tend to drink more coffee and smoke more cigarettes. And my dad smoked until he had a heart attack. He decided to stop at that point. But they also, even the ones that don't smoke and drink a lot of coffee, still sleep less. And that's probably because they're always freaking working, right? And trying to meet either real or self-imposed deadlines. They, as my mother used to say, they fly off the handle. My dad had a real problem with anger. loved the man dearly, but he certainly had a problem with anger. He'd get over it very quickly, too, which was, quite good. But the littlest thing could make him just snap. Yeah, please, Jeff.
Can the drive to work hard be inverted?
Like, oh, I think everything's part a bit of both, you know.
Can they be driven to do things that are bad for them? Like too much time playing video games or...
I think that's probably true, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I look at my brother and I, and we're both like this to a point as well. But of course, the environment plays a role as well. You know, that was my male role model. And I mean, he also taught me how to be a father and how to be a man, so that's pretty cool. But, you know, I certainly am like that to a point. Was like that much more until a few years ago. My brother is certainly like that. Again, he's calmed down a little bit. I think we all had a bit of a wake-up call when Dad had a heart attack, because it was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't all be so intense anymore. And he actually really did change quite a bit after the heart attack, because it's scary, you know. It's a scary thing, you know, because you think, oh, I could have died, you know. But even when he was in the hospital, he turns everything into some kind of goal he could accomplish. I would visit him every day after work because I was working in a lab, and I'd come down and then I'd walk home because it was close to home. And I'd show up with my knapsack, and he'd say, I stole more of those thermos cups. So you know the thermos cups they have in the hospital? Dad thought it would be a good idea to steal a bunch of them. So he stole them. He then called me at home from the hospital and said, Dave, what I need is I need about a 3/4-inch bolt and my Dremel tool. I said, what? Are you going to operate on your own heart? He said, no, I figured out a way to give everybody on the cardiac floor free cable. Because it had this sort of male version of a screw. Okay, so it was flat, and then it was the end was sticking out. So he took a bolt and made it in, Dremeled out the right size. And then he'd go around, he'd tell people, when the cable guy comes, don't get cable. I'll hook you up, don't worry. And then as soon as the guy'd leave, Dad would walk around with his, like, thing with the, you know, with the IVs. And then he'd go, free cable, click. Free cable, click. That's just the kind of guy he was. So even in the hospital, he was insane. You know, see, that's what led, I mean, and the beautiful thing is here, we've got something where, again, and this was, I would say certainly my dad had a type A personality, but it led to him being a pretty successful guy. It led to him having, I think, 3 successful kids. It led to him being successful in business. Him and my mother were together for the time they were 15 and 13 until Dad died 2 years ago. You know, he did really well. He did really well. But, and it wasn't his heart that killed him. He had a brain tumor a couple years ago. Because he actually got quite heart healthy, it turned out. And he also did inherit a problem with cholesterol that was controlled with drugs, so it was no problem. But this anger, this driven personality, and I think you're right, Jeff, I think this can be inherited, and then it depends on whatever you're interested in. So if it is, say, video games, or if it is cooking, or if it is, and it doesn't matter what it is. My father would, whenever he would take up a hobby, would take it up to a point of ridiculousness. In 1972, he bought a guitar he hadn't played in a long time. So he bought an electric guitar, and he bought it at Sears. You know, he just found a cheapo one. Within 2 years, we had the largest Fender guitar collection in Canada. Yeah, when I learned to play bass when I was 9 years old. I had a 1957 precision bass. If anybody knows what that means, that's pretty cool. He decided to start making wine in 1970, 71. We had a wine cellar with 800 bottles of wine in it within a year. Yeah, when my mom went and bought him a camera for Christmas 1 year, she went into like a camera shop and she said, yeah, I'm going to have about $400 to spend. And that's a decent amount of change in the mid-80s. I'd like a really good camera and something that can't have anything added on to it. Because one of my bathrooms will become a dark room. That was his personality. But it led him to, he out of nowhere got into stained glass 1 year. We needed one of those, he bought a pool table. Needed one of those lamps that said, you know, that goes over the pool table. He said, and as my dad's attitude always was, well, I can make something like that. I'm not some kind of idiot. I can do that. I'll get a book. It's like, I think the only book he ever read, besides a manual for something, he's reading it. Oh, this is easy. Next thing you know, we've got stained glass everywhere in the house. There's fake Tiffany lamps that had made. It was just, he was, again, just showing. And those are just 3 examples off the top of my head. it was always that way. We start. I used to make beer, and then we get back in London, and Dad said, I want to start making beer. That sounds like fun. So we start making beer, and we went and bottled it. And he said, this is bullshit. I'm not bottling beer. That afternoon, he installed a kegging system. That's just the way he was. So, and like I said, he was driven like that, like most people with a type A personality. And it's probably the anger. I should go back. It's probably the anger that is the key thing, because if you react to stressors in your life like deadlines with anger, that's your stress system going online, right? Your flight or fight response. But it's not going on and then the energy getting used, right? It's not like you're actually fighting or fleeing. What you're actually doing is just seething and getting to the point where you hit that exhaustion level, which is where it's dangerous, right? See, the thing is, and we all know this is bad, and I mean, though that didn't kill my father, it almost did. That said, I think the point can be made that this is what we like in people that have power. Would you vote for someone who said, yeah, I'll get around to it? No, you wouldn't. I wouldn't. Right? Would you want to work at a company where someone, the guy running the company, said, yeah, well, we lost some money this year, but whatever. No, you wouldn't want to work there. We like type A personalities. Because, in fact, a long time ago, it was probably very adaptive, right? It's adaptive still today, but we didn't used to live to be 50, 60, 70 years old. You know, we used to die at 40. That was an old man. Right? So we like intensity. It may be the case that the people with the, quote, type B personalities are as successful as type A's, but we still like the type A's better. And I think, you know, intuitively we all figure, you know, you think about people that are big in industry, for example, they're type A personalities. Right?
So is the type B personality
It's the opposite in a way. It doesn't. I think if you were to make this kind of determination, I think you would say the present president of the United States is a type B, because nothing seems to faze him. He's calm. Right? He gets mad now and then, but it's almost like he's been told, get mad now. Right?
So would type B be more like adaptive?
Not necessarily. I think it's more laid back. It's more the way to look at it. Like, don't let things bother you because there's a big picture. Whereas instead of, I screwed this up, I'm going to break it, which was my dad's approach and was mine for a long time as well.
Is there a personality that's a mix?
Yeah, and that's the problem with this. It sounds like you're either one or the other. First of all, even if this thing does exist, it's a continuum. There's no way it's a dichotomy, A and B. It's got to be a continuum. It's exceedingly unlikely. And I doubt that Roseman and Friedman thought it was just this or this. I think what we have here is a range. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that, you know, you could be successful being a B. Like I said, I bet Obama's a B. He works hard, very smart, you know, but it seems like nothing really fazes him. Things don't seem to get him too pissed off. Maybe, though, he does that in private. Maybe he's a good enough politician to know not to yell and scream in public. I don't know. Then again, he does. He is the kind of guy that apparently gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning to work. Then again, he's got kind of an important job, so maybe we can forgive that. Right? So we all talk about how much we want people to be calm and relaxed, yet it's unlikely, usually, we would say, we're going to vote for that guy. I'm not saying we want somebody that's going to go, oh, that guy looked at me the wrong way, let's nuke him! That's right? But I think we like intensity. Right? Now, there are people that are calm, that are successful, but it seems like it's much easier to think of people like, say, Steve Jobs, that are very intense and angry all the time, that are pretty successful. Right? Questions about that? That was mostly so I could reminisce about my father.
Type B slide?
Well, the type B is the opposite. And I don't know who that would be because I don't think I have any friends that are type B. Really? No, I mean, part of being an academic is you're pretty driven and you're used to deadlines and all that kind of stuff. So I think most of us are more A-ish than B-ish. You know? Yeah, well, I think everybody's a bit of a, yeah, it's a continuum. Sure. And don't worry if you think you are. What I don't want you to do is start diagnosing yourself with anything. Please. You don't know how to play the game. You haven't read the rules yet. Don't play. It's like when medical students, their first class at medical school, they all think they have malaria and beriberi and let's think of something else. Bubonic plague. You don't. Please don't try to do this. No, it's still around. It flares up now and then. We can deal with it, though. We have medicine, that's right, rather than thinking it's trolls. A little bit about the immune system, because, I mean, the lack of sleep and the stress, think about this for the type A person, lack of sleep and stress, what's that do? That, well, your immune system works when you're sleeping. And the stress, when your GAS is activated, your immune system basically shuts down because you're more, again, evolutionarily worried about the saber-toothed tiger. You basically, and this is a vast overgeneralization, you have two types of cells. You have B cells that fight bacteria and T cells that fight viruses and cancer.
Why fights cancer?
Yeah, just not very well. Yep.
Cancer's very good at hiding.
It's not, and it also grows so fast. Yep.
So people remember this, everybody gets cancer at some point in their life, they just don't
know it? I've heard that said. I don't know that that's true, but it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me.
Exposed to sunlight causes cancer, so.
Well, everything, a lot of things will cause it. It's a matter of, do you end up getting it? And it's a complex combination of, and different cancers have different causes too. So, some are completely caused by viruses. Others are caused by environmental factors. So it's really hard to nail that down. Now, as I said, stress suppresses the immune system. This diverts resources to the GAS because it's more important to what's more important, fighting off a cold or making sure you live to fight off a cold? Well, obviously part two is, yeah? So people with high stress levels end up diverting more resources to the GAS, so they get more infections and they even end up with more cancer. Now, I'm not saying that being stressed out causes cancer, because that's not what that says. It says it makes it harder for your body to fight it. Now, you must understand that... that's a point I'm going to make later, so forget that. There is a way to deal with this, and that's to be in better shape, right? Because if you can deal with being stressed, so psychological shape, right? So in other words, don't let every little thing bother you and get you angry. Remember, we talked about the daily hassles. Those are the ones you have control over in your stress reaction. So don't let those things bother you. And when you really are stressed, if you're in good shape, you're less likely to hit exhaustion. Good cardiovascular shape. So take the stairs. You know, it's really simple things like that. So really only a sort of healthy lifestyle can help you in a big way, and I'm not being preachy. I hate that. I don't like the preachy. You should eat more lettuce. Go to hell. Lettuce tastes like dirt. To me, I don't like lettuce. I'm just saying.
Spinach
tastes good. Lettuce tastes like dirt. It's good. I'm not saying I'm eating dirt. I wash it. I'm not an idiot. I've got a bunch of letters after my name. I don't know, wash vegetables. So, but only the healthy lifestyle can help you in a big way. You can't, smoke, drink, smoke crack, have unprotected sex, and say, yeah, but I have a positive outlook, so I'll be fine. The world doesn't work that way, right? It's not like you can, abuse the hell out of yourself and say, yeah, but, I don't have a lot of stress. And when I am stressed, I have a couple of drinks, and I'm fine. It relaxes me. Right? That's not going to help you in any way whatsoever. So when I say healthy lifestyle, I mean I'm talking about all these things. You know, drug use, the food you eat, all that kind of stuff. Now, the thing is, health psychologists are interested in this because they want to talk about promoting health and why people go to an MD, things like that. Why some people do and some people don't. People have talked about differences between people that are interested in information and aren't. They talk about repressors and sensitizers. A sensitizer is somebody who wants to know everything about a procedure. Every time they go to the doctor, it's like, okay, what are you going to do? What are you doing now? What about this? And a repressor is the kind of person, again, this is the complete opposite. It's always somewhere in the middle for most people. Is the person, like I said the other day, I have a lump on my arm the size of a grapefruit, but if I don't go to the doctor, it's not cancer. Right? There's the sort of two ends of things, right? But some people want to know about everything when they're having some kind of procedure. I know when my father was in for his heart attack, and then they did the thing where they put the stent in, you know, the angioplasty, and he wanted to know all about it. He wanted to know all about it. And even though he was drugged up because you're awake during that thing, he wanted to watch it on the monitor. He said, well, we need the monitor, Rick. We have to see where we're going. I'm a little bit the other way. When I had a procedure to make sure we couldn't have more children, and I was told, and then they start doing this thing, and the doctor says, well, what I'm doing now, I said, just hurry up. I don't care. I don't want to. I know how to do the. I actually said I know how to do the operation, doc. I actually could if I could see better and had a razor blade. I could do this. I swore a lot during that too, but that's a whole other thing. I was just a little child. I was crying like a little baby. Yeah, you laugh until you have it done, buddy. So we have this repression sensitization thing, and that's something that's maybe interesting because, and that's the same kind of people. By the way, why do people want, the people that want to know about, say, a medical procedure, want to go to the doctor a lot, they're the same people that want to know, that obsessively check their bank balance even, right? They're the kind of people that, for no apparent reason, want to know how everything works. So it's not just about health, necessarily. Then there's the other people that don't ever go to the doctor, even when something clearly they should. They're the same kind of people that, if you said to them, have you filed your taxes yet? They'd go, oh, right. I thought if I didn't think about it, it'd kind of go away. They're never going to know. Right? So it's those two kinds of people. And again, most of us are somewhere in the middle. Most of us are somewhere in the middle. Like at the dentist, I never want them telling me what they're doing. It's like, just get it done. Besides, you can't talk back to the dentist. He's got his fist in your mouth. You know, and he's like, so, did you see, you know, do you watch that Lost? Do you like Lost? It's like, and I'm supposed to talk to the guy? I don't want to talk because all that's good. Then he pulls his hand out to get my reply. It slows down the whole thing. I want to be in and out of the dentist. I don't like going to the dentist, even though I've never had any pain. But you know what happens then? Last time I went, first cavity I had in my life, I said, so when do you start doing it? He said, it's done. I said, oh, I thought you were just doing preparatory stuff there because it took 5 minutes because I keep my mouth shut. Not literally. Yeah. So in other words, your biggest thing here is how do you deal with stress? Because that's one of the things besides your lifestyle stuff. How can you control it? Because a stressor, getting sick is a stressor. People, by the way, that are these repressor kind of personality types, they know they're sick. Right? The sensitizer, again, on the very extreme end, knows he's sick and wants to know everything. The repressor knows he's sick and just wants to put it out of his mind. It's a stressful thing, being ill. Right? So, and of course, either end of those that continuum is bad, right? Because if you're at this sort of really sensitizer thing, you're always going to be really stressed because you're always you're going to read everything possible. And now it actually is possible. You can go on the interwebs and read all kinds of stuff, and you might think that you have all kinds of problems with yourself.
Isn't that called being hypochondriac?
No, not necessarily.
Hypochondriac is physical stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, we call that somatoform disorder. Yeah, don't call it hypochondriac anymore. But what that is, people actually believe they really have things and they really do have symptoms. But the other thing is, what they also have sometimes is they take every little thing and they turn it into, they think it's a disorder. Right? I think I said the other day that my knee hurts sometimes. I know it's because I'm 44 years old and I played football in high school and I shouldn't have played with my knee taped up that one day. I know that if I wake up with my back stiff, it's like, well, I'm 44 years old, and I sit cross-legged on the floor all the time because I did that when I was a kid. Even though I have a nice big TV now, I still sit cross-legged in front of the TV because I'm just used to doing that. That's probably not good for my back. So I just know that. Someone who's more of a sort of somatoform type person would show up and say, well, you know what, that could mean cancer. Because, of course, there is pain in cancer, and it could be stiffness. Well, I think I have leukemia, you know. But that's stressful. So is the person who's ignoring it. Because when I say repression, it's not like Freudian repression where you are pushing it away and you actually don't think about it. You know it's there. You just ignore it. You try to ignore it. And that still causes stress. So what's the key thing here is you have to be in decent shape no matter what approach you take. So the better shape you're in, you're also going to sleep better and all kinds of other things. So your reaction to stress is key. So an aerobic exercise is the key thing. Right. Running, biking, swimming, those kind of things. More than likely, this helps you stay in that resistance phase of the GAS longer. And if you can stay in resistance and the stressor's gone, you're not going to hit exhaustion. Exhaustion is the most dangerous part. Right? That's, you don't want to hit the exhaustion phase. That's when you're, everything's depleted. Your defenses are down. You're, even though your GAS isn't active anymore, your immune system can't work. You've got literally no energy. You're tapped out. All right. Questions about that? What's biofeedback? Well, this is this mechanism. This was an idea that came out really in the 70s. And we actually can learn to control our heartbeat and our blood pressure. You really can. It's pretty cool. The way you learn to do this is you're hooked up to a device of some sort. Now, it used to be these were very expensive devices. Thousands of dollars. Now you can literally do it with... you could buy parts at, you know, Radio Shack or The Shack or The Source by Circuit City or who the hell they call themselves now and make such a thing. Basically, what happens is you get hooked up to some kind of device and say it monitors your blood pressure or your heart, your pulse, your heartbeat. Then when you get to a target blood pressure or heartbeat or whatever, a tone goes off or a light goes off. Okay? Now, at first, it's like, well, I don't know how the hell that's going to work. I don't understand. I don't know how I got to that place. But eventually, you learn what it feels like to calm down and relax. And you learn it because you just know, oh, the tone came on, and I felt like this. I'm going to try to feel like that again. This was all in the 70s when people came up with this. It's like, oh, this is the greatest panacea ever. We're going to get everybody calmed down. Everything's good. And then it turned out there's another way to do it, and that's just teaching people relaxation techniques. Now, again, you can do biofeedback now much cheaper, but people don't tend to do it too much anymore because we can just teach people relaxation. Relaxation techniques are pretty cool. Basically, the idea here is you lie down or sit down in a very comfortable, quiet situation, and you're told by the person who's teaching you this to tighten and relax, so contract and relax, various muscles. Usually like, you know, starting at your feet and then going all the way up. And then you're told, how does that feel? Do you know how that, does that feel like you're relaxed? And you go from there And now it's like, you know, so you get feet and then maybe your calves, etc. And so you learn how to do each individual one and you note how it feels to be relaxed. The same sort of thing you're doing with biofeedback. The difference is I'm just telling you, now let it go. How does that feel? Note how that feels instead of a beep going off. Eventually what happens is you can do all the individual muscle groups. Eventually you do them all at once. You tense up your whole body. Let the whole thing relax. That kind of relaxation training, it actually is an amazing thing. When I was in my third year abnormal psych class at Western as an undergrad, we had our prof was an expert in this, and he put us all to sleep by doing this. He turned the lights off. Not all of us, but like there were probably 50 of us in the class, and probably 30 of us had fallen asleep within about half an hour. He said, "This is really easy. This is what you do." And he starts doing it. And feel how that feels. Now relax. Da, 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 da. And then, you know, then the next thing you know, he turns the light back on. And we're all like, oh, wow, that was awesome. Because we'd all actually fallen asleep. That's how relaxed we got. And that was in half an hour. Pretty cool. So really, learning how to relax is an important thing. Because then, look, if you know how that feels, you can then turn it on. So if you're in a really intense situation that isn't one where you're in danger or you need to be really up, just relax. So you can really pair this nicely into some sort of a cognitive behavioral therapy approach where you get people that are really stressed out all the time. You say, okay, now you got to realize, looking at the situation objectively, is this really something that should stress you out? Is being upset and angry going to solve this? Because sometimes it solves things. But is it going to solve that you did poorly on a test? After the test, right? Is it going to do anything? Well, no, it's not. But it's not good to get stressed out over it. Why don't you relax? And if you know how to relax, you can go, okay, here we go. Oh, yeah. Then you're not going to have the GAS kick in. The GAS is very useful if you really are threatened. But if you're not, you're hurting yourself, especially if you're not in pretty good shape. So that's what biofeedback originally was like that, but now people typically use relaxation training. And the beautiful thing about it is it can be even used to get rid of phobias, right? Because all I do now is I take the thing that you don't like, you're afraid of spiders, I just pair the spider with, and I tell you, relax. Get your phobias, and you can get rid of a phobia in a couple of hours like that. Because now, when you see spiders, you relax. Pretty amazing. Questions about that? All right. Let's talk about some behaviors that clearly cause illness. Smoking cigarettes does. First of all, quitting smoking is something that's difficult for most people to do, but it's doable. Most people take somewhere between, the stuff I've read, between 8 and 12 attempts at quitting, if they're quitting cold turkey. Okay? Between 8 and 12 attempts. You can be helped along with things like nicotine patches and gum and various other nicotine replacement therapies. For sure. Lasers don't cure it. Yeah, and hypnosis does it. There's a place in town that advertises that they get rid of smoking by firing lasers at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're lying sacks of shit. No, they are. They're lying.
A laser at you if you didn't want a cigarette.
Well, yeah, if it's a really powerful laser and they blow you up, you'll never smoke again. Yeah. It's like a Geth assault rifle.
Every time I see those ads, my brother believes them.
Well, first of all, those ads shouldn't even be legal.
Yeah.
Because they're making claims that clearly aren't true. Right? The percentage of people, I bet, that are successful, there's about 18%, because that's about what it is for people quitting cold turkey. I find that very upsetting, that whole thing. It's funny, when someone brought it up to me last year and said, have you heard these ads? And I said, that can't be true. And then I heard one on the radio, and I said, what? And I don't understand why they haven't been shut down yet. Because, I mean, it's the same thing as the Q-ray ionized bracelet.
Maybe nobody wants to challenge them because they think somebody else is going to do it because it can't be that ridiculous. Or the people who
can could be.
Don't want to.
Could be. Well, it's kind of like when you watch the Q-Ray ionized bracelet ads and you think, my God, people buy these things? What is this, just a tax on the stupid? You know, I mean, it really makes you wonder. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. I'd love to know the mechanism for lasers curing quitting smoking. Except, again, Jeff's idea of actually firing a powerful laser that will hurt you. That would work.
A Death Star crew operating around the clock.
Yeah. That would work. I think that would work. I also fear that would be exceedingly expensive and highly dangerous. But things like nicotine replacement works. Other drugs, basically, they're for getting rid of withdrawal symptoms. A lot of people take antidepressants because depression is a withdrawal symptom from nicotine. Anger is a withdrawal symptom from nicotine. Right?
Is stress a withdrawal symptom?
Anxiety, yeah. Yeah, so I think you would probably say stress.
Probably the unpleasant effect of stress itself.
Well, if I get stressed, I want to smoke.
Yes, and in fact, that's because nicotine operates on the GABA system in your brain. It's a stimulant, but it also calms you down. It's a really insidious drug that way. Yeah. So
if I quit smoking, would I be more stressed?
No. In the short run, yes. In the long run, the health benefits of quitting smoking far outweigh the health detriment of being stressed for 3 weeks. Right? Right. Other thing is, we talk about gaining weight because, you know, we talked about diet and that. Most people, the average person does gain weight when they quit smoking.
This is a fridge.
But the average person doesn't gain weight. You're saying, what? The average person, on average, people gain about 4 or 5 kilos, around 10 pounds-ish when they quit smoking. But most people don't gain weight. In other words, some people gain a lot of weight. Most people don't gain any. Right. So it's got that health benefit too, where, you know, some people think that it's a good appetite suppressant, and actually nicotine in a way is, but it's also a rather dangerous one. The biggest deterrents, by the way, to smoking are the price. If you raise the price of cigarettes, fewer people buy, especially younger people, teenagers. You know, if they're $15 a pack, people that are adults that have a disposable income will go, okay, whatever. That sucks. They might cut down a little bit. If cigarettes are $15 a pack and you're 15 years old, that's a lot of money. Right? It's interesting, though, too, the long-term effects aren't the biggest deterrent. Though I will say there is some evidence that the Canadian system of putting really graphic labels on things, even if some of them are lies. No, the ones about heart and stroke and burn, those are all true. Those graphs about how many smoking-related deaths, those are hard to validate. I'm just saying. I'm not saying they're good for you. Please. Whereas the health concerns about heart, stroke, all those things, those are true for sure. And the mouth cancer one, that's a great one, isn't it? Right, with the mouth, with the teeth, and the... It's horrible. There is some evidence that those kind of graphic things are successful. Because we have the most graphic cigarette package designs, apparently, in the world. And it seems to have cut smoking down a little bit. But the short-term effects, in fact, telling people... And especially younger people, what the short-term effects of smoking are much more effective than saying, you know, when you're 70, you'll die of lung cancer. When you're 17, you go, okay, good. I'm smoking for now. I'm not going to get it now. And some people do, but it's really a small percent, very small, that die very young from smoking, right? The short-term effects work. So if you tell people your clothes smell, that works. If you tell people... Your teeth get yellow. That works. If you tell people that people, in fact, and this has been used for young people, your girlfriend / boyfriend will not want to kiss you because your mouth will taste horrible. That works. Because it's pretty hard to tell somebody who's 17, you're not going to live to be 73, you're going to live to be 62. It's like, oh, who gives a shit? The world will be all gone by then anyway. What's also been successful is telling young people that they have been lied to by tobacco companies. Because there are very few things that people that are 15, 16, 17 like less than being lied to by authority. And if you and they have been. We've all been lied to by tobacco companies for years. Nicotine is not addictive. So, that's my impression of a tobacco executive before the U.S. Congress up until about, 2000. It's not addictive. It is just an enjoyable habit that I enjoy. It's toasted. Anybody get the Mad Men reference? Anyone? So, in fact, it's interesting that telling people the short-term effects is actually what helps, which isn't surprising. Day-to-day is, you know, telling people that in a long time from now you're going to get sick. It's like, yeah, everybody gets sick when they're old. All right, questions about that? Just one of these things, the message there is that it's hard. You should keep trying because eventually most people can quit. As far as nutrition goes, I mentioned this before. Fat's good, right? We need fat. I mean, one of the things that separates us from all the other animals is us snapping bones open and, snapping them open with stone axes and eating the marrow. It is a huge source of energy. And it is so good. Bone marrow is so awesome. You roast it, and you put it, just spread it on bread, man. Yeah. Live like a caveman. It's awesome. Except have better appliances. So we craved it. We needed fat. We had an energy budget when we were on the savannah in Africa that was pretty high. One of the things that we had to do, the way we hunted, was we didn't hunt like a cheetah. You know, a cheetah runs really fast and kills, but they can run for only a couple of minutes. Humans, it seems pretty clear the way humans hunted, early humans, is what we did is we just ran after things till they completely collapsed. Because we have a whole lot more. We're very good at endurance. Probably why we don't have fur. Because we don't want to overheat. See, because there's no way we can't go one-on-one with a cheetah. We will lose. You would lose now without a gun. And it'd be a big gun, and you'd have to shoot quick. Something runs 140 kilometers an hour. But if you just follow a freaking wildebeest for 20, 30 hours, you just chase it. Eventually, he collapses. Then you go, okay, guys, go get the spears. And you kill it. That's how we hunted. So we had quite a big energy budget. Right? So fat was really important because it stored energy. Sugar was important too, but there were very few sources of sugar except, as I said the other day, of honey. Right? You could get carbohydrates, you could get sugar in that, but I mean, the big thing that, in fact, it's probably the case, one of the big things that separated us from our other ape-like ancestors is we ate meat. It really is. I'm not saying that if you're a vegetarian, you're going against nature. I'm saying you have no joy in life. But but what I'm saying is that, you know, back then, back a couple hundred thousand years ago, a couple million years ago, the reason, the big advantage we had was that we were smart and that we had this endurance. And the way we could do that was by having no hair. And what we had to eat, we got to eat lots of fat. Because it's energy. It's stored energy. No one was going around in the caveman days going, you really shouldn't have so much saturated fat. You shouldn't eat so much bone marrow. Have some nuts and berries. No one was doing that. So that's great. We're evolved for that. The problem is now we can get it in industrial quantities. We never used to be able to get, just buy fat. No, and we're not running, exactly, and we're not running marathons. We're not chasing after our prey. You know, I don't go to Rome's and run after a steak for a couple of hours. Right? So I feel very primeval when I go to, like, a real butcher shop, like go to Bruni's there, the butcher block there, and I walk in, there's all this meat. I feel like I'm in touch with my inner Australopithecine. And then I say things like that, and they hate me. Are you buying any steaks? You know. But see, the thing is, we've evolved for this for the longest time. Up until about 10,000 years ago, that was how we lived. That was how we lived. Now, humans can live on a lot of different things, by the way. Okay, so it's not the case that, you know, there were a lot of people that were very agrarian, but there weren't as nearly the threats from predators as there were, say, back in Africa. And I'm thinking about back in Africa, but even up to 10,000 years ago. But let's say when humans showed up, probably 200,000 years ago. Before then, there were threats. We had to kill them. We had to eat fat. After that, it's hard to fight all that those years of evolution. It's hard to, you know, and that's why, you know, deep-fried things are good. Fat tastes good for a reason. Our ancestors that liked the taste of fat ate more fat. When they enjoyed fat, you know, Lothar of the Hill people, when he looked over and he said, "I don't want fat," he didn't end up having any kids, because the next day when he was out hunting, he collapsed. So now we can get it in industrial quantities. That's the problem. So much of it isn't good for you. And the thing, of course, we really like are saturated fats, right? In tropical oils, things that are really heavy and and they're probably the worst thing for you. However, I believe nothing is worse in the world than the invention of margarine. I just want to make that entirely clear. So, we worry about this a lot now, and we should. I mean, you know, it's an issue. It's a proper issue. It's hard to change your body weight set point through diet alone. And in fact, it's almost impossible to change it anyway. Your body wants so many calories each day. And for everybody, it's a little bit different.
What's your
set? It varies from person to person. So it's what your hypothalamus, how much food it thinks you should be taking in. Yeah. And to change that simply by not eating so much, that's just your body thinking it's starving. So all it does is make you want more food. Just going on especially a calorie restriction diet, is very difficult. Because when that happened to our ancestors, what did they do? They went hunting. Right? That's very adaptive. Or gathering, also good. If you don't, so what you're doing is telling your body, "Oh, I'm starving. I better go eat." It makes it even more difficult, right? Changing it, however, by using diet and, of course, exercising, and everybody knows this, because then you can take in a lot of calories, but you're burning them off. That's the important thing. A lot of people seem to think you burn off fat and turn it. You ever hear that? Feel the burn! Shut up. Nothing gets turned into muscle. I've also heard this one. You know, if you get a lot of muscle and you get older, that muscle just turns into fat. I don't know who these people are. Alchemists? there's a point that can be made, and I think it's... When we think about the stress level of being overweight, now it's not good for your body. There's no doubt about that. You're in poor shape, so you're going to have more time and exhaustion, etc. But there's also the stress of worrying about it, and there's a school of thought out there that says if people are overweight, they should just accept it. And I'm very amenable to the idea of people accepting who they are. I think that's a good idea. On the other hand, if it's something you could control a little bit, you know. But I mean, I don't know if you know the story about what happened recently to film director Kevin Smith. So he's gone on quite the crusade, rightfully so, because he was treated like crap. And
you know, there was actually an incident where a tall guy sat in front of somebody, like, pretty much the same week, and he wanted to recline his seat back. And the guy behind him said, "What the hell are you doing?" And everybody's siding with him instead of, you know, getting against Kevin Smith for being, you know, a fat guy.
Yeah, see, and that's interesting. So, yeah, what happened with Kevin Smith was he ended up... And it isn't the case that he's too fat to fly, as he always, as he keeps saying on his... If you listen to his podcast, it's called Smodcast, smodcast.com. You can hear the whole story, and it's great. And Kevin Smith's hilarious. But he was basically told he had to sit to buy two seats, even though he could put the armrest down and put the seatbelt on. And I don't think they realized that they had a guy who was probably just going to relentlessly talk about this for the rest of his life and embarrass them. But the interesting thing is, when you look at the general public... It looks like they're coming out against him. Whereas with this tall guy, they're all on his side. right? And I really think there's something to be said for accepting who you are and trying to be healthy. There's nothing wrong with trying to be healthy. But I kind of get really annoyed at this whole health thing. You know, I can sit here and say you should be healthy, healthy lifestyle and all that stuff. That's all true. But I'm a grown-up. And I'll do it at the hell I like, thank you. So it kind of bugs me in the other way. And I mean, that's sort of what I hear a lot of people say. Now, there are people, as a friend of mine, who was exceedingly overweight, and he went and had a gastric bypass because it probably saved his life. Right? I think I will say it certainly saved his life. But this guy was really big. But, you know, I really wonder about, maybe people should just accept who they are. I think people should also realize what they're eating. Don't misunderstand me. I find it depressing when I go to a store and I see people buying things and I think, first of all, I could teach you how to make what you just bought frozen. It'll be a third the price, taste better, and be better for you. You know, except for the frozen corn dogs, pogos. Oh, that's Xbox Live food right there. I love those. So there's something to be said for that. But on the other hand, excuse me, I think, you know, and the constant worry. And I mean, people that are bigger, they often overweight people, they get discriminated against anyway. It's really annoying. I think there's something to be said for acceptance. People are going to be happier if they can accept themselves and people start accepting them. And the disadvantage, of course, you're still overweight, and being overweight isn't good for you. I think much of the publicity about health in general is done very poorly. I think it's done very preachy, right? I think you can say this about anti-smoking, anti-eating fat, all these kind of things. Giving people facts is one thing, and then throwing in the, and you're worse than Hitler, is the problem. And it seems like this is what ends up happening all the time, where people get preached to, and I don't think adults like being preached to, right? I don't want to be told what to do. I don't like it. Now, there's a fine line there. I mean, if I was drinking a whole bottle of rye every day and someone said you drink too much, they're probably right. But if I have 3 or 4 or 5 beers a night, or 6 or 7 or 8, and I can still come to work and I know the hangover, that's not a problem. None of your goddamn business, right? If I want to eat pogos now and then, that's none of your business. My kids' school, they said that they ban certain foods. Now, the peanuts, fine. I understand that. Apparently now everybody is allergic to peanuts. No one was when I was a kid. I'm serious. It never happened. I don't know what happened to the world. But, and even if it's a very small number, a little kid gets some peanut, it can kill. I get that totally. It's like putting the nets up behind the glass at a hockey game. One person was killed by a flying puck in the history of the National Hockey League. But you know what? Putting those nets up doesn't hurt anybody, and no, nobody's going to die. So I'm totally fine with that. But, I mean, you know, we get this thing home, and it's like, no more, and they list all this stuff. Now, it's all stuff that isn't healthy. Those Lunchables, those are disgusting. You know, I agree with that. But instead of saying you can't have that for lunch anymore, how about here are some healthy things your kid could have? And, you know, no fast food. So I immediately made fried chicken and gave it to my son for lunch, even though I wasn't Kentucky Fried, but I made my own fried chicken. So that's what you're having for lunch, just to see what happens. Because they'll call me once. I think it's sort of preachy, and it really bothers me, and I think it bothers a lot of other people. I mean, I've made jokes before about health kaida. You know, I mean, these people that believe that the most important thing that you can do is eat lard vegetables and not smoke cigarettes and never drink alcohol and never smoke weed, because if you do, you're bad. Well, for some people it does. And for other people, they're perfectly happy eating rabbit food and never drinking. And that's their own business. That's their business. But don't impose it on me. That's all I'm asking. So am I nuts? Do people think I'm... Because I think it's very... I just find it all very...
It pisses you off in a lot of ways.
What's that?
I bet PETA really pisses you off.
On many levels, yeah. Though I'm a member of people eating tasty animals, so... but... I don't know. I just think it's poorly done. On the other hand, I will say, for example, I'm disgusted when I go to the States and I see the Taco Bell, and on the side of the thing, there's a thing about fourthmeal.com, going to Taco Bell. Yeah, because you need four meals a day. And one of them should be really, really, really gross, heavy Taco Bell. Come now. That's why everyone, as people always, that's why the rest of the world hates us. You know, things like that. You know, that's a bit over the top. But saying don't eat meat anymore and don't eat this and don't do that and don't eat fat. Fat tastes good, damn it, I like it. The last time my son wanted French fries, you know what we did? We cut up potatoes and fried them in duck fat.
Ew.
No, awesome. Don't knock it until you've tried eating duck fat.
I don't like duck fat.
No, everybody likes duck fat. First of all, conclusions here. Stress is good and stress is bad. It's good because it can save your life. It can save your life. We need our stress system. We need to be able to run away or to fight. It can save your life. But it's bad in that most of the things that we react to nowadays with that system aren't really stressors, objectively. They are stressors because they make our stress system activate. But they're bad. They're not so bad that they're threatening at all. Right? The example, as I said, of someone standing in line in front of you and they're taking too long and they're going to write a check. Or, you know, they keep getting their card declined and it says not enough money in their account. And they say, just try it again. Like somehow magically more money is going to appear in their bank account. Right? Is it annoying? Yeah. Should you get like this? No. Most respects, the last two lectures are this. Your mother was right about virtually everything. Calm down. Relax, eat healthy, don't smoke cigarettes, don't drink too much. Just relax. Everything will turn out okay. The kind of things our mom said, yeah, your mom was right, actually, about all that stuff. Questions? Oh, we got done a little bit, that's okay. Start personality on Monday. Thanks, guys.
She got everything I need. Yo, feeling like
podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me, because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.